Welcome back, everyone.
This is the Bless You Boys podcast. BlessYouBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. I'm your host, Brandon Day. With me, my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how's it going tonight?
Good, man. It's been a while.
I know. I logged on and Skype didn't remember who I was. I was like, damn, Skype. It's only been a couple weeks now.
Well, we had quite the perfect array of events where I got really sick and I didn't have a voice and I couldn't hear and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure there are at least three listeners right now going, man, she still had no voice, but that's fine. That's you guys. Fine. I love you too. That's cool.
What they're saying to themselves is, oh, thank God. It's not going to be Brandon talking for a solid hour with no like interruptions and games and whistles. And
no, they love you.
Well, they might love me.
To our iTunes review.
Oh, yeah, that one review, yeah. Well, that's the only review we've ever gotten to, which I guess...
Fine. Somebody loved me enough to write it in. That was great. I loved it. It's fine. I did not cry about it later.
Oh, no, you were fine.
But no, I've been really sick, and then, of course, the Tigers have been relatively uninspiring. And so it's been a lot of fun, but here we are back again.
Yeah, and honestly, like, you know, I was kind of laid up for part of the summer, so I ended up just kind of carrying things at the site as far as, like, being the one who's awake in the middle of the night doing the stupid minor league recap, and then getting the recaps done. So, I don't know, like, about a week or two ago, I was just like, you know what? It's like, I need to step away.
Yeah,
the minor league season ended, and I was just like, I can't do anything for a week or so. I need to just clear my head.
Of course, both Rob and I had no home internet, so it's been... it's a comedy of errors at Bless You Boys for the last month, but I think we're getting back into our groove again.
Yeah, I think we are finding the groove, but yeah, like half the staff is either moving or just found a new job or is going to school again, just started school. So yeah, it's just been a total cluster lately, much like the Tigers.
Yes.
You could almost say it was a tribute. It was a tribute situation. Yes. But yeah, I mean, it hasn't been very inspiring on the field, of course, but and so we've just been trying really just to celebrate the wins, like, you know, like they're the huge triumphs that they kind of are for this group. I don't know. It's fun to just kind of blow it out of proportion when the Tigers win a crazy game like they did against the Yankees.
Huge home run derby against the Yankees. I didn't end up, I was on the road for work and I kept checking in. And every time I looked, it was like the score was like suddenly 11-11. And I'm like, what is happening in this game?
Yep. Every once in a while, the offense just kind of like pulls it all together and everything goes okay. And I think, you know, sometimes like the opposing team is as shocked as anybody. They're like, yeah, you know, I checked the lineup before my start and I didn't recognize any names other than Miguel Cabrera. And then all these guys just kept hitting singles off me left and right. And then a guy hit a home run. You know, yeah, it's
we were told this would be an easy win. We are the Yankees.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. Like, you can fall asleep a little bit. Yeah. But, of course, it is the Yankees. And so they rebounded today by walloping many, many dingers in a straight doubleheader after Wednesday's game was rained out. Took the Tigers out twice today. Matt Boyd wasn't terrible, but continues to have his kind of fading,
lackluster
second half. Yeah,
I keep trying to say I'm not worried about Matt Boyd, but then he keeps not improving.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm just not sure what to think about it because, I mean, part of it, he's got to start changing speeds more. He knows that. He's talked about needing to use the changeup and stuff more, but he just hasn't really been that sharp. And I don't know, maybe, you know, the season just kind of wore him down. They just had a new baby. I don't know, maybe he hasn't been in his full baseball place the last month or so. But yeah, it's been a little concerning. We all kind of hope that this is a stepping stone to him being a little bit better even again next year. And yeah, I don't know, right now it's not feeling great on that score, is it?
No. But I mean, you're right. It is kind of like, I mean, it's August is the dog days of summer, so we're even beyond that. But, you know, it's kind of at the point where the stamping is on the gravestone for the season. And everyone knows it. And I think the team is starting to feel it. And it can't be nice to be out there seeing, you know, Nick Castellanos talking about how great and welcoming and wonderful the Chicago Cubs are. And, you know, the winning environment and vibe while he knocks in his little 14th home run with the team.
Yeah.
And it just can't, when this is the guy who was leading your ship and was your union rep and was your guy in the clubhouse, right? Like, I think it's tough, and I don't mean to pin everything on Nick here, but as an example, I mean, it's really hard when you you just have nothing kind of pulling you through those last couple of months.
Yeah, so there's not really that tough. Much to, yeah, there's just not that much to play for. And really, I mean, it's the young guys who don't feel that way, I'm sure. So you also have, like, the mix of, like, all these guys having their first kind of major league experience and, you know, probably excited, nervous, you know, whatever, freaked out a little bit.
Wanting to prove yourself, too. I mean, who was it that came out today? Was it, like, not Brandon Dixon, but, like, it was, oh, my God, Ashley, your friggin' brain.
Travis Demeritt?
No, it wasn't Travis Demeritt, who, by the way, I love that I finally started pronouncing his name right after he debuted, because I wanted it to be all French.
Yeah.
And not just, like, cashing in Demeritts. It was Beckham. It was Gordon Beckham, who was kind of like, you know, you can't play on the Tigers, you can't play anywhere.
Yeah.
Kind of statement, like, to these young guys. Like, you got to prove it, and you got to prove it here, because if you're not making it count in Detroit, you're not going to get picked up somewhere else.
Yeah,
and
no,
like, that's
trust
some
you,
hard
yeah.
truth to be handed down. So I don't know. It's not a, you know, cheerful environment, I feel like.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when they get to the end of the season, I do think, like, everybody kind of tends to loosen up, like, the final week or two, because it's like, okay, you know, we're almost through the season. Let's try to enjoy these last, you know,
yeah,
10
yeah.
games or whatever, and have a good time. But yeah, it's Gordon Beckham had that statement, and, you know, and Jordy Mercer's kind of said some things along the same lines, like, you know, it's, you know, there's always something to play for, but a lot of the time you have to really work to, you know, to figure out what it is for yourself. And in his case, it's, you know, okay, you're going to play Willie Castro at shortstop now, and I understand, you know, how things work and what my role is at this point, but, you know, I also need to go out and show teams that, you
that
know,
I'm
I can
still useful.
Yeah, I can play second base, you know, I can play outfield in a pinch if you needed to, and try to set himself up for some kind of a, you know, veteran, you know, the player coach utility man role that, you know, someone like Ian Kinsler has been serving and guys like that. So, I mean, there's always something, but yeah, I mean, baseball is a grind, and even more so when your team doesn't have, you know, even any shot of being respectable, and you kind of have to find
you're,
that thing
you're
for yourself
really,
every
really
just at bat.
You're the games between other winning teams and their position in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You're the easy wins that the Yankees are looking for, and that can't feel good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, can you know, if you can make, it just depends how, you know, each guy particularly is motivated. You know, some players, I'm sure, really like to, you know, put the chip on their shoulder and be like, yeah, all these teams think, you know, this is just the point in their schedule where they, you know, they pad their lead or they close the gap, you know, in the playoff race and all that kind of stuff. And if you can get annoyed by that and kind of, you know, have a little bit of cheek to you, like, no, we're going to, you know, steal your thunder and
be a spoiler.
The legs out from under you. Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe, you know, you can find a way to motivate yourself all those ways. But yeah, you watch some of these guys play right now, and it just, you know, there's just mental errors. There's things that, you know, I'm watching, like, Jake Rogers, and who has had, like, minor pass ball issues in the minor leagues, because he's working too hard on the framing issue and trying to catch everything almost too clean when it's not necessary.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some things to work on there, but it's almost like, you know, they've got too much going on in their head, trying to do too many things. And Willie Castro, some of these guys really look like they're in their head and their feelings both at the same time, a little bit trying to get comfortable and settle in.
Yeah, I think we'll see. I mean, this was a bit of a discussion amongst the staff today of, like, is he truly the catcher of the future? And I think you're right. I think it may just be a bit too much of a focus on framing right now, which is something he's good at. And yep. I think it's still learning a new pitching staff and doing all that. But he's also used to kind of a shuffling pitching staff, even down in the minor.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know that that's really the blame point, right? Like, he kind of got bumped up, and he was playing with a bunch of different pitchers earlier in the season, so I don't know if maybe it's the caliber of pitchers that has changed. But I mean, you got Manning and Mize, who are nothing to shake a stick at, and yeah,
he might have had better pitching when he was at Erie the first
he
month
might
of the season.
Have
yeah.
exactly so maybe that's part of it, and he didn't really have to do as much blocking. But I think it's stuff that he can work on in the off season, and I think we're going to see a pretty steep improvement by spring training. I'm still not at the point now of worrying about Jake Rogers.
No. I mean, there's just so many things that get in your head to begin with, and then when you're the catcher, you have way more responsibilities, way more things to learn and to focus on than if you're a shortstop or a reliever or somebody coming up. So, Yeah, I'm gonna chalk it up for the most part to those kind of things. It just seems like, it's more like understanding where the emphasis has to be placed. Like if there are runners on base, don't worry so much about the framing. You've got to keep everything in front of you. And then, okay, if there's two outs or if there's no one on base, yeah, that's when, you engage Mr. Perfect Soft Hands and try to snatch everything on the outside edges and hold the ball and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, just learning not just where, not just improving your,
Prioritizing.
yeah, exactly. Not just working on your skills, but being able to prioritize them as the game progresses and unfolds. So, yeah, I'm not gonna worry too much about that. It has been a little bit disappointing that we really haven't seen any of the position players who've come up this year really do a whole lot. I don't know. When other teams are bringing up all these guys, it just seems like every week someone's calling up a top prospect who takes off and hits five home runs or something in their first week.
I see Bo Bichette's hair flipping all over my Twitter feed right now.
Kyle Tucker came up for the Astros. Even like Abraham Toro coming up and having a pretty big role in his own way. And Justin Verlander's no hitter. All these teams are getting these little contributions, but it's just a fact that the Tigers haven't really called up their best guys because almost all of them are pitchers or Isaac Paredes, and so it makes sense that some of these guys will take a little while to settle in. But the thing that just keeps irritating me is watching guys like Victor Reyes and Dowell Lugo and Jake Rogers, all get to the major leagues and then start hearing about all these things that they need to do with their swing. Like, oh, well, they're going to need to make some changes. We want them to hold their hands in a different position. We want to take away their leg kick. We want to add a leg kick. It just seems like none of this work goes on in the minor leagues. And I know that it does, but it's just incredible how often these guys get to the major leagues and then it's like, oh, well, yeah, now it's time to overhaul their swing. And it's like, what the hell have you guys been doing down there the past 2 or 3 years, It just feels like the Tigers have such a hands-off, just kind of method to player development where they just want them to play the games. It's all
The
about just
Tigers
playing games.
way.
Exactly. I was on the radio in Toledo today, and Mike Miller actually specifically asked me, like, why is it that the Tigers are so bad offensively and like don't have any hitting prospects? Like, is this has to be an indictment on Al Avila and the entire system? Because again, I was just like, oh wow, thanks for the meatball. Like, this is amazing. I'd love to answer this, but I only have like a minute. This is a hard question on the radio, but yeah, it's something that we're just going to continue discussing because until the Tigers produce a whole bunch of bats and find some somewhere else, like it almost doesn't matter how good all the pitching on the farm is because somebody's got a hit. So yeah, I don't know.
I think that I mean, you and I both agree on this, but I think the long-term kind of plan for the Tigers has always been raise your pitching, buy your bats. And I don't know that I agree with it, but it seems to be what their focus is, which is, it's not fun because it means you don't have anyone exciting to look forward to. I mean, outside of the pitching staff, which of course we have had posts on this from Zane, who did a great piece about the potential 2021 rotation, and there's a lot of excitement to look forward to on the mound. But like, we got to get somebody who can, get the ball over those apparently impossible Comerica outfield walls.
Yeah, which everybody else seems to reach with no difficulty when they're here. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we're, technically like 2 years since they declared the rebuild, but yeah, we still haven't found a single hitter or a single major league position player since Al Avila took over, and that's just bad. That's not good.
No.
You don't just find them in the draft or in trade necessarily. Like, we've seen the Yankees just pick people up off the scrap heap all over the place this year and just make a little tweak for them and improve something in their swing, or in some cases just tell them to just kind of be themselves and stop trying to do there's players like Cameron Maben who've been bounced around for the last 4 or 5 years really between teams, and anywhere you go you get new instruction, the team wants you to play a little differently, and it probably does get into your head to where you don't even know what player you are anymore because you're just trying to keep your job and stay where you are. So the Yankees seem to have a knack for just kind of unlocking, whatever a guy's natural ability is. Some other teams have certainly done plenty of that as well. And yeah, until we start doing that, it's just really kind of hard to see the future. And yeah, you kind of nailed it there where the Tigers seem to, I don't know if it's necessarily the plan that they were going to build through pitching, or if they were just kind of in best player available mode, and for them it was just the pitchers because they, you know, have a better idea what they're looking at there and aren't as good with hitting. But yeah, I don't really have a problem with that philosophically, but you still have to find the bats someplace. So, and as we found out this week, well, and I mean, we've been talking about this all along too, because the fate of the Tigers ownership and everything is, you know, just feels real in question, I think, still to everyone at this point, even though it's not something that there's much to talk about, because we don't have any insight into, you know, when the Tigers might be sold, or if there's a chance that, you know, that Chris Illich would actually decide he wanted to hang on to them. But it doesn't seem like that's the way it's trending. And so, you know, the expectations that they would buy the bats to go with the arms may be, you know, a little bit overly optimistic as well. They may just have the arms and that's just how it is. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I know that was kind of something you're talking about, the potential for selling the team.
Yeah,
was something. Lynn Henning had a post about that I'm not sure everyone saw, because Lynn technically is off the beat now, but has been writing some prospect stuff recently and kind of sharing his thoughts. And he's you know, as much as people kind of poke fun at Lynn, has some pretty solid background insight into people and things involved in the team. So I don't generally sneer entirely at his opinion.
Yeah.
Or his information.
Exactly. Like, sometimes I'm not there with the opinion, but the information you can trust. You can trust Lynn to report what he's seen and what he thinks.
Information
going on
is never
going
to be conjecture. So what I found it interesting when he posted this week that said that the team won't be sold right away, but when the Illich matriarch goes, is when you may see things start to move, and that there are interested parties kind of waiting in the wings. And of course it's hard, you know, for that family to not want to do that. Like, I don't begrudge, you know, Chris Illich, when you look at something like with the Royals, where you sell a team for $1 billion.
Yeah.
Like, this was never Chris's passion project. It was Mike's.
Yep.
And, you know, I can't be mad at a guy who's, you know, waiting for his mom to go because it mattered to her too. To say, maybe I will sell this for $1 billion.
Yeah, or $2 billion. Yeah,
yeah, you know? It's a great city and a really good market for it. So,
yeah, and the timing, you know, just kind of coming up with new contracts, you know, in TV and radio. There's just a lot of kind of factors that all seem to be a little bit murky and just out of reach in the future, that we don't really know what the plan is or how long, you know, it's going to be before they, you know, they renegotiate all these contracts. But all those factors together do kind of, you know, make a compelling case that, you know, this is a pretty good time for the Illiches to get out if that's what they want to do. And yeah, I don't know if Marian Illich, you know, is, maybe she is super into the team. I don't really know. They would know better than I, but I did see, I think it was Bill Shea from Cranes Detroit, who,
Bill Shea's awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome. The business writer. And, I mean, he was kind of talking with Lynn about the same thing and just pointing out that, you know, there've been hints that, you know, Tom Gorris has already inquired about the team, that they've, you know, that they've gotten plenty of offers. But he also said something interesting in that it sounded like he believes that the Tigers are kind of floating a lot of the rest of the Illich organization, while they've kind of got a lot of, you know, ongoing projects in the Detroit area that they're very, very slowly working on, and that, you know, that the sports teams might be a big part of the actual cash flow, and that may affect when, you know, when it's okay for them to sell and when that window opens for them too. So,
well, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's all speculation and nobody really knows, but it just kind of goes to show how many different factors that are out of sight will be brought to bear in that decision. So it's just hard to know. And I mean, I think we had all already more or less braced ourselves for the fact that even if the Illiches did keep the Tigers, it wasn't like Chris Illich was going to, you know, turn into his dad and sign, you know, Mookie Betts and JD Martinez offseason, you know. Oh God, that would be fun though.
Oh, that would be so much fun.
And Yasiel Puig. Oh, I shouldn't even think about it. But yeah, you know, these things don't seem to be in the cards for the Tigers anytime in the future. We'll be shopping in the bargain barrel. Maybe we can get ourselves a, you know, a discount price Scooter Jeanette or Travis Shaw or something to help out a little bit. Do what we said.
Pretty sure Scooter Jeanette is a free agent right now if we really wanted him. He got dropped by the Giants very shortly after that move.
Yeah, but you know, you give him the part of the off season, see if he's healthy, check his medicals, all that stuff, and then maybe, because right now if you sign him, there's nowhere to play him anyway.
No.
So Yeah, so obviously there doesn't seem to be a ton of interest because the Cubs didn't come sniffing around when Javi Baez tragically was injured. You know, but that's because the Cubs can just call up Nico goddamn Horner, plug him right in, yeah, and they're fine. Yeah. They just got Ben Zobrist back. It's incredible just seeing teams being able to solve their problems that easily. Like well, these are teams that aren't just like Brewers. Trying to get. That's true, but the teams that are trying to get in the playoffs, you know, you'd think they'd be maxed out and like they're trying everything, and no, you know, Javi Baez goes down, and yeah, we'll bring up Nico Horner. You know, the Dodgers have a little trouble. We'll bring up, you know, we'll trade Puig in the offseason, and we'll bring up Alex Verdugo, and then we'll bring up Gavin Lux, who's like the best player in the minor leagues this year, mm-hmm. our new shortstop.
With like best name. Like, yeah. Can we talk Gavin about Lux Gavin is Lux? Is name. The name of like a rock star in some sort of like Netflix Black Mirror not a special.
Real, exactly. Not a real rock star, but the rock star.
No, like an imagined fictional rock star from like the near future. Yeah. Like, Gavin Lux, that is a made-up name.
Yeah, like some kind of foil to like Hedwig from The Angry Inch, you know, like some kind of like a dark rocker with slick black hair and, you know, sunglasses and a bad heroin addiction. Something, I don't know. Gavin Lux, that is a good, very good baseball name. But yeah, all these teams are just calling people up left and right. Even teams that have been winning for years now are still outdrafting the Tigers and just, you know, calling up pitching prospects like Dustin May, and yeah, it's frustrating. It is frustrating to watch. There does seem to be a little trend of injury going on, though, because not only did Shohei Ohtani go down today, but Christian Yelich the other day fouled one off his kneecap, fractured his kneecap.
Yeah. Oh, that's a heartbreaker. So he's out, obviously, for the rest of the season, and it's not good. But he did get to avoid surgery, which is great, which means he'll probably be back next year.
Yeah, because it really did seem like, for a while, people were talking like, that surgery takes like 6-7 months to rehab. He might not be back next year either, which would have been awful.
Oh, gosh. And yeah, you're right. Shohei Ohtani's out for 8 to 12 weeks now, I think.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and these things suck because this is the time of year when my attention starts to, like, okay, like, the Tigers are wrapping it up. Like, I haven't paid that much attention. I just know, like, how the races are going, and I've watched some games from other teams. But this is where it's time for hardcore baseball fan who has a terrible team that they root for to, like, pick a couple favorites and start, you know, following the postseason. So
all as our attention,
oh, I'm sure you do. As our attention is turning to that, and then yeah, it's like all these injuries to key players. Oh, hate to see it. Seems like maybe Javi Baez will be back for the postseason too, but
yeah, hopefully.
But, but meanwhile, Ashley's sitting in the catbird seat because the Rays are just trucking right along.
They're not doing terribly, that's for sure.
Yep. How many games up are they right now in the wild card?
Oh, that's a great question. They're still playing right now, but hold on, I can tell you. They were like a half game up last time I checked, but that was not recent. It is very close between them and the A's. I guess between them and... they are a half game up
Cleveland
right now.
Okay, yeah, and Cleveland is kind of falling
Cleveland's
back a little
about
bit.
About a half game behind Oakland right now, so...
Yeah.
Good on you, the A's, though. I'd love to see the A's push Cleveland out.
That'd be fine by me.
Would not be mad about that. But yeah, I'd like to see the Rays push their win a little bit further ahead. I think they're still on an expectancy for about 94 or 95 wins this season.
Yeah.
Which, it's insane to me that you can have a 95-win team and not be a shoe-in.
Yeah, like, it really is. It seems like you should win 90.
Like, that's insane. They won 90 last year, and people are like, what the hell? And then, yeah, I don't know. Don't get me started. We're not a Rays podcast. I have to remind myself that.
Well, and if you go back historically, of course, like, when there was only, like, two teams, and they just went to the World Series, like, you know, teams would win 100 games all the time and not make it.
Yeah,
So circumstances are at least better for the underdogs these days.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I was saying before we got on the call that I have to start thinking about my budget and whether or not I have to go to the World Series this year.
Yep.
I went the last time the Tigers were in it, of course. And if you have a team, right, you want to be there for the big games. So, oh man, I got to start pinching pennies.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you just don't know, you know, how many chances you're going to get necessarily.
Well, that's just
it. Even if you're the Yankees, you know, if you didn't go see the Yankees in the World Series in 2009 or something, you probably didn't imagine it would take, you know, 11 seasons until you got another another possible chance. So, yeah, exactly. You just never know how things are going to go.
So, yeah.
Speaking of Oakland, yeah, because this is the Tigers have been making some, like, at least some kind of strange and bizarre news. But let's talk a little bit about the makeup home game from the game that was canceled back in May, because it was just hilarious, kind of, as people started diving into what would happen if you took the stats from the game when it was finally completed and plug them in terms of the A's streak that was ongoing back in May and everything. It was just kind of ridiculous, like how many things were affected by that.
Yeah, there was some hilarious stuff in there, like because of course Josh Harrison was playing in that game when it ended, like when they had to call it, I think he had two strikes, and they called it mid bat, and so he obviously has been released and is no longer with the team. So Jordy Mercer hopped in there to kind of finish his at bat and struck out, which means that he actually impacted Josh Harrison's final line stats with the Tigers and managed to reduce them.
Yep.
So, and there were some other weird ones. Like, I think Nick Castellanos hit a home run that day for the Cubs. So it means that he technically hit a home run for the Cubs in the same day he hit a home run for the Tigers in that A's Tigers game.
Yeah, because if you go to search that game and everything else that happened that day at Baseball Reference, you know, through their database and the play index and all that kind of stuff, yeah, it looks like Nick Castellanos homered for two different teams on the same day.
Yeah, and then I think it was Demerit or something ended up getting, because I think he hit a home run or he did something in that game, so technically got that before his like debut. Like,
yeah,
all sorts of ridiculous stuff. It was really like tremendous weird fun facts.
Yeah, if you're kind of a stats geek or just into all those kind of oddities, yeah, there was just a ton of it. Yeah, what was the, oh yeah, and the other thing about it was that because technically it was a home game for the Tigers, like you went into the A's Coliseum and it was like welcome to Comerica Park was up on the up on the board and all that kind of stuff, and they had it flipped and stuff,
scratched out and was like Comerica, and then they put like the background of Detroit's view and everything like that. It was really cute.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was just a really really odd series of events there. So yeah, that was kind of one of the more interesting games that we've seen lately. It was pretty fun little stuff there.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've talked a little bit about Mr. Boyd. Let's talk a little bit about a happier subject, which is Mr. Daniel Norris.
Oh, I'm always down.
Yeah, because I just want to take a moment to gloat, because I don't usually get a chance to gloat that often, or I just don't take the opportunity, but goddamn was everybody, like, super down on Daniel Norris all last offseason, and I understand it, I understand why, but goddamn, people, you can't give up on young players this fast, especially when they don't have, like, an arm injury. When you're a pitcher and your shoulder and your elbow are fine, there's still a chance, so, yeah. So I just want to get that off my chest, because as it turns out, Daniel's like been as durable as anybody on the team, has held up all season, hasn't exactly been great, no doubt about that, but, you know, has basically put up league average numbers and innings for the Tigers all season long, and as I had foreseen, is starting to find a little bit of his velocity coming back. And
good.
Yeah, so I'm gonna you know, hold my position here that Daniel Norris is going to get in better shape this offseason, finally have an offseason with no injuries involved where he can just go and do his thing, do his, you know, taekwondo and
surfing and
sitting on assorted, you know, piles of, you know, discarded furniture and taking pictures, you know, whatever it is that he needs to get in the right frame of mind in the off season and come out next year and look a lot more like the Daniel Norris that we find that we last saw really in 2016. So that's been a positive for me, is seeing him starting to put it together that way. Because then you have him, and we'll see what the Tigers do with Boyd this offseason. I don't know. Maybe there's still a chance of a trade. But at least you've got Daniel Norris. You've got Matt Boyd. I don't know about Spencer Turnbull. I'm still, you know, jury's pretty far out as far as whether or not he's going to be able to kind of rein everything in and tie his pitches all together and be able to compete as a starter. But you do have him in your back pocket. And you've also got Michael Fulmer coming back next year. Not to mention the opportunity to finally maybe just move on from Jordan Zimmermann sometime next year, because it's, you know, it's just not working out.
Oh, it's not?
No, not really.
This is news to me.
I'm sorry to break it to you like this on a podcast in front of other people.
I'm going to burn my Zimmermann jersey. What's going to happen? Oh, no.
Yep. So, I'm crying. You know, yeah, so I could see, you know, Daniel coming back and having a pretty good year next year, and that at least is some consolation for this season. But yeah, there isn't really a whole lot else that stood out. Like, if you're looking at the young Tigers for the most part right now, is there anybody that gives you that feeling like, yeah, this guy might actually, you know, turn into a major league regular baseball player for the Tigers who produces above, you know, the league average WAR next season? Is there anybody out of this group that you would forecast that for right at this point?
I still believe in Jake Rogers, Brandon.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, I should leave that out, 'cause I do believe in Jake Rogers.
Okay. We're not including Jake Rogers. Okay. Like of our current major league roster or like Erie, like, or like, you know,
the major league roster, like any of these guys who are, you know, kind of not Gordon Beckham, not Jordy Mercer, 'cause we know they're going to be gone, but Travis DeMeritt, Nico Goodrum, Victor Reyes, Dowell Lugo, Kristen Stewart.
I still have moderate expectations of Willie Castro potentially doing something. I am still a Nico Goodrum believer. I mean, he's never going to throw up like a 130 WRC plus or anything, but I could see him being like a good 108 guy for next season, you know, above average consistently. I could see him continuing in that role. I would really still just kind of like them to throw him in at everyday second base.
Yep, I would still like to find Nico Goodrum a home as well. All right, that's a good one, because that's actually what I would have said as well.
Oh, damn, we agree.
Yeah, because I think, you know, like, Nico Goodrum has kind of flown under the radar again a little bit, and unfortunately it doesn't look like he's going to be able to come back this season. But you know, posted a 94 WRC+, 102 last season. There's still kind of some things to like there, and if the Tigers could just possibly find him a position there, that at least is one guy that I feel like could play a starting role and not hurt you and at least be an average player.
I feel like he's a non-liability going forward. Like, I think that's a guy that's not going to like lose you runs. And for the 2020 season, I feel like that's a boon for the Tigers.
Yeah, so. For sure. I mean, really the only flaw with Nico Goodrum is that he does strike out too much, but guys who walk and hit for some power and can steal you some bases and play all over the field, like, I'm into that, and I'm hoping that Travis DeMeritt can kind of turn into that same type of player. Like, I don't really believe that Travis DeMeritt is going to work out and be like a 3 or 4 WAR regular in right field, but yeah, if you have two guys like that who can do a lot of different things, at least it gives you some flexibility there. The sad part, I think, is that it really doesn't feel like Jamer Candelario is kind of making it happen. Like, it doesn't really feel like that's coming around. And that surprises me, because he still to this day has such a good approach and, you know, really good plate discipline. We know that he has the raw power to, you know, to drive a ball 440 feet. We've seen a couple of them. But he just doesn't seem to be able to take it to the major leagues from Toledo, and it's a drag. I really like Jamer. The defense was really good at third base, and he's done just fine transitioning over to first base somewhat to let Dowell Lugo play. But Yeah, I'm just not, I'm not sure it's going to come around, but he is still, at least we do have this going for us. He's 25. He's going to be 26 next year. Most of the other guys that people are thinking of as our prospects who are in the majors this year are that old or older already as well. So perhaps there is still some hope, but yeah, he's been disappointing. Kristen Stewart has been okay with the bat. I think he'll take a step forward next year, but obviously the defensive issues have all kind of come to the fore for everyone to see, which we had talked about throughout his minor league career, and that's just going to limit sort of what they can do with him as well. But I don't know, the way things are going, maybe Miguel Cabrera, averages 80 to 100 games per season going forward. Maybe Kristen Stewart has plenty of opportunity to DH as well.
Yeah,
So
and that's you and I, like even last year, that has said that that's really where he's kind of positioned to go in the future. And I think that's really the best use of him.
Yeah, I think so too. Maybe he could improve a little bit defensively, but he's not particularly young. It seems unlikely he's going to get much faster. I don't know. I said the same thing about Nick Castellanos, and Nick kind of proved me wrong by getting in a lot better shape and kind of getting leaner and everything. I don't know. Maybe Kristen Stewart has a little bit of that in him, but yeah, it doesn't really seem like a starting outfield role is going to be the place for him long term.
No.
All right. Well, this brings us to the man of the hour,
Oh, darn.
the legendary Victor Reyes, who I think is probably everybody's kind of choice for young Tiger of the Year, the way things have gone this season. Have you gotten to see much of Victor Reyes play lately? Because I know you've been very busy.
I have
I have
not.
not.
Yeah. All right. Let me break it down for you, because
Please tell me the Victor Reyes story.
yeah, I mean, Victor Reyes right now feels like the classic Lloyd McClendon pupil, who's basically like taken his two strike approach and made it his entire approach. Like, I'm just going to shorten up. I'm just going to kind of serve line drives all around the field and try to spray the ball. And surprisingly, it's been working so far. Right now, I think Victor Reyes, where is he sitting? He's got a 101 WRC plus. So
Nice.
he's batting 309, which is pretty darn good. Although we all know that batting average is
Yeah, batting average is, the lowest common denominator stat, but I like it. A 309 ain't bad.
But the flaws, of course, are he doesn't really walk very much. Like, the walk rate isn't terrible. 5.1 isn't terrible, but it is below average. And then you look at his BABIP and it's 400.
But I mean, how many
And
games is that?
216 plate appearances, 52 games.
Well, I mean,
So, I mean, there's just no way that's not very, very lucky.
you will,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the thing. Like, you look at him, and really all he's got going for him right now is batting average, and that batting average is pretty heavily propped up just by the ball dropping in ways that it really doesn't over the longer term. So, yeah, I'd like to have better news for people out there about Mr. Reyes, because one thing he has done this year is kind of developed into a pretty solid center fielder. We saw him play pretty good left field last year, but he's actually been above average in center field according to a couple of the metrics. And I think that really kind of, at very least, I don't want to, like, we were talking about this too, because I'm actually writing this article, and I was trying like hell not to just like pile on in a season full of misery and kick the football out from under everybody who's looking at Victor Reyes like the one guy who actually has kind of done something and looks like he might turn into something. But there's only so much you can do, and there's just a lot of weakness in that profile. But what it does tell me is that because he's figured out how to play center field and has the speed to do it, like, maybe at least there's a role for him as a fourth outfielder, which I didn't really even think was possible. And it's possible too that maybe he and Jacoby Jones just, kind of just platoon out there. Jacoby Jones did pretty well this year on his own, like made some strides, but
He made some strides, but he also went backwards in jump, which is like, I mean, nobody cares about jump but me, but like it is interesting to see how it decreased over the past couple of seasons. And when you've got the only guy out there who's a pretty consistent outfielder decreasing, like right now Jones is listed under Kristen Stewart as far as player jump goes, which I think is not a great sign.
Yeah, probably not. Although, you know, the other thing too, though, is like that jump stat is pretty new. I'm still not sure.
It is, but I find it
how to
interesting
take
because
it.
It's not like it's not a, you know, a runs averager or anything like that, but I think it's a really good way of measuring a player's reaction time and efficiency when it comes to getting to a ball. And that's not for nothing when it comes to being a good outfielder.
Oh, for sure.
And to see it decrease regularly over seasons is definitely something to, I think, keep an eye on, because it just means that you're getting worse at reacting, and that's not a great thing. I mean, like, look at Jump. If you guys have never done it, it is new. It is just a stat that launched this year, and it breaks down outfielder reaction times and into like three separate phases. So kind of like reading the ball, moving and reacting to the read on that ball and moving in the right direction to get to the ball is basically the three phases of jump. And the combination of those and the speed and accuracy of which you move is kind of how they assess player quality. So it is a very interesting stat, but it is very new, and it would be like me to latch onto something like that. So
yeah, for sure. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's just one of those things that's broken. It's broken down, and I think it's cool. I'm just not sure if, you know, if that actually tells you, you know, what how good a guy's defense is. Like, it's just so hard, because if you're a guy who's really fast, and, you know, like Jacoby Jones, you know, you have super huge closing speed. Like, taking extra step to make sure you've got a full bead on, you know, the ball's trajectory and distance, maybe doesn't hurt you. But it is interesting for sure. And I also, I don't know, there was just a few hints this year of a slight decline in his speed. I believe it was especially from home to first. And that's another one where, you know, there are so many factors in that. Like, maybe, you know, if you're swinging, if you put the ball in play on more outside pitches where you're reaching for the ball, maybe you don't get out of the box as fast. It's really hard to know how all those different factors interplay, but it is interesting that Jacoby Jones, you know, like, so much of what he does well is based in his athleticism, and guys like that don't always age that well, or if they do age that well, like, it can be a real, you know, one injury that all of a sudden just changes everything for him, and then, you know, it's just kind of over. So yeah, I don't know. You know, Jacoby Jones is already 27 as well. It's hard to really imagine him being around and a starter, you know, whenever the Tigers decide to, you know, be competitive again. Impossible, but it's just like, you know, 3 years from now, is Jacoby Jones going to be better or worse than he is now? And most of the aging curves would suggest that a player who's barely hanging on as a hitter in the major leagues and, you know, is based kind of in his speed more than anything, probably is going to struggle at that point. So.
Yeah, and I don't particularly see him being able to be kind of converted into a utility Don Kelly type. Like, I don't know that he has the flexibility to make himself useful in that way.
Yeah, it's hard to say, because he was, you know, he was an infielder when he was in the minor leagues too, and maybe, but yeah, but he just hasn't done any of that in so long, it's hard to know.
I mean, if you were going to, like, think long-term for Jacoby, I think the plan would be to start kind of testing him more in trying to maybe put him in the infield, like, not permanently, but just say, like, hey, I wonder what you can do at third base since Jamer Candelario is terrible.
And Dawa Lugo probably is terrible.
So, I mean, like, maybe throw him there for a game and see what happens. I mean, it can't be much worse than it was with Nick.
No, I'm gonna imagine that he's probably not bad in the infield. I think he'd probably be all right. Like, we know he's got an arm. He's got a good arm.
Yeah, he's got some quickness to him too. So,
yeah,
the reaction time would be the thing to watch for. So I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Yeah. Maybe it'll go that way. I think for next year, the problem is we just don't have anybody coming up to push these guys out of their role either. So, you know, Jacoby Jones and Victor Reyes are probably going to compete, you know, for the center field job next spring.
Well, one of them is going to get injured, and then there won't be a competition. So.
Well, there's always that sort of thing, but at least they're not pitchers, you know, maybe it won't be quite that bad. But it's just getting to that point where, you know, Jacoby Jones kind of either needs to break out, you'd think, next year somehow, or he's just going to settle in the way I assume Victor Reyes is, as kind of, you know, utility outfielder guy who pinch runs sometimes and, you know, and that's kind of it, which is unfortunate because Jacoby Jones did make some strides this year at the plate, But, you know, he increased his walk rate. He hit for a little bit more power. 11 home runs in 333 plate appearances, as opposed to 11 home runs in 467 plate appearances last year. It's just kind of a drag that we didn't get to see him, you know, down the stretch, because I would have liked to have gotten a better eye for whether, you know, things have actually changed for him, or if the ball is just kind of bouncing his way a little bit more this year. Yeah, so we'll see how those things go, but again, like, it's just hard. We're just scraping the bottom of the barrel with these guys. Like, there really isn't anybody who's exciting me, unfortunately. Even Willie Castro, who I like, and Willie Castro is a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, and you know, people out there who, if you don't really kind of think about much, you know, the minor leagues or prospects or aging curves or any of that kind of stuff, it's super important how young these guys are or aren't. Like, if a guy is 25. The odds of him really improving dramatically in any way are pretty slim. Like, it does happen. You can all throw up your JD Martinez and Jose Bautistas at me all you want to. But for the most part, you know, by the time you're 25, 26, you're kind of who you are. But when you're 22, like Willie Castro, you can look terrible right now, and that's okay. And if he comes out next year, swings the bat a little bit more like he did with Toledo this season, and plays solid defense, you know, you're all going to be very happy. I'm still not sure he's like the starting shortstop of the future. He still might be more of the utility infielder of the future, just because the bat isn't really set up to be, you know, particularly good, maybe average. But for now, you know, you just kind of got to let these guys like screw up and make mistakes and take their lumps a little bit.
You just gotta be like, they'll do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Jake Rogers is another one where it's, you know, they did all these things with him in the minor leagues. Jake Rogers was the one guy who you actually could see, like, all these swing changes they were trying. Like, you know, setting up with his hands, you know, higher and then lower again. And then they decided low was good. They were going to keep the hands down. They tried to get him to get rid of, you know, the leg kick and go to the opposite field more. And then either they changed their minds about that, or Jake Rogers just said, no, this isn't working. I've got to, you know, swing for the fences and hit taters because that's my game. That's all I got. And so he kind of went back to the big leg kick. And yeah, it's, I don't know. It's just been kind of a mess, sort of, the way they've, I don't want to say it's a mess the way they've handled him. It just feels like a mess because there's just been so much kind of experimentation along the way. And then it was just like, well, you're in the major leagues now. Go get him, kid. And unfortunately, he's really kind of just blown a tire offensively. So it's nice to see him get a couple hits today. I'm not that worried about him. He's not nearly as bad as he's looked so far. Yeah, I still think he's going to kind of end up grading out as a pretty average hitting catcher. And everyone should take Ashley's advice this offseason. They didn't last season. And sign themselves a decent hitting veteran catcher. Let Jake Rogers and Grayson Griner kind of cycle through AAA a little bit. One of them can come up, the other one, you know, goes down.
I would like the Tigers to sign Alex Avila again.
Yeah, I mean, he really
is. He's a free agent.
Yeah, he's kind of the perfect candidate for it. There's a couple other guys, you know, maybe you try that with Luke Roy or someone else, but yeah,
there's options, man, but you're never going to be mad at yourself for signing a veteran catcher. Like, yep. Mike Zunino might not have panned out as well as the Rays had hoped, but he was really good. Yeah. Who thought Travis d'Arnaud would have been as good as he was for them? Like,
yep.
Take a risk on a catcher, my friends. To GMs listening everywhere, I would sign myself a 27-year-old to 29 or 32-year-old catcher any day over a guy who hit, you know, a couple extra home runs last season.
Yeah, I mean, if the guy can play, you know, first base at all, you know, like, just add a guy like that to your roster, because it just seems like, and especially with the, you know, the 25-man roster expanding to 26, you know, why not stash that extra guy? Leave yourself the ability to pinch hit for your catchers late in games, and you just never prepared. You just never have enough catching. Nobody does. There just aren't that many catchers who are good and can hit. There's just, you know, not nearly enough to go around. So any chance to get someone like a d'Arnaud who has that ability to kind of get streaky, you know, yeah, you should take that on. Because betting on young catchers to come up and hit while you're also, like, in their ear every goddamn day for hours about, you know, the other team's hitters and all their pitch tendencies and all your pitchers and all their tendencies and how to manage them and, you know, what to think about in this count, what to think about that count. And then it's like, Okay, and then go learn how to hit well too while
Yeah,
you're at it.
no
It's
big
just a
deal.
lot harder. Yeah, it's just a lot harder thing than it is in any other position. So, yeah, having that veteran experienced catcher around, I am always in favor of. The Tigers have kept John Hicks around for, a couple years for no real reason because he isn't, good at anything. But he can catch, and if you can catch, like you can almost always kind of sign on somewhere. So, yeah. It's just not a bad move, especially, we saw back in 2017, we didn't necessarily need Alex Avila, but,
He
someone's
was
going to need
good
a
and he was
catcher.
trade bait, so.
Someone is going to need a catcher. Like one of the teams heading to the postseason, that's the one thing you can't just, kind of fudge over. Like, well, all right, Carlos Correa's down, we can just move Bregman to shortstop and call up Toro to play third. Or, if you have a problem with your catching down the stretch, you have a major, major goddamn problem. So yeah, you just never know. There's just a little bit more opportunity to trade those guys, I think, than just kind of a generic infielder or outfielder type who a team might figure they can replace anywhere. But you're never going to get very much for them. It's more just a function of like you've talked about a whole bunch, is having a leader to kind of guide these guys, tell them what to think about, tell them what not to worry about, and bring a little bit of stability to the locker room. So
I really
yeah,
appreciate that
I
you
listened to
listened
you.
to me.
I was all on board for sure. It's like, can we? I mean, especially because my God, like I thought they were just. It really felt like because they didn't do that, I thought they were just going to be like, ah, fuck it, end of April, we're calling Jake Rogers up, him and Griner. We're going for it the whole season, but then they didn't do that, and it was just like, dude, you guys are gonna play John Hicks and Grayson Griner. Like neither of these guys can hit, and neither of them is really a plus as a catcher. Although Griner continues to impress me in some small ways, and actually seems to be, I think, Griner's gonna be a fine backup catcher. It'd be really nice if he could find a way to tap into his gigantic behemoth power, because he's a big son of a gun.
Well,
But yeah, we'll just have to say.
for me, the thing is, I was never mad about him being brought up. I was irate about the idea of bringing up a guy who's had 37 plate appearances as suddenly being your everyday catcher.
Like we're
You
just
just
going with him.
don't do that. It's a setup for disaster.
It really is. And the question with the Tigers always right now is, well, but does it matter? But in that case, it really does because you're hurting your pitchers when you don't have good defense, when you don't have a solid catcher that they're familiar with and that they trust. It's not good for anybody. And the only thing the Tigers can really do on the field right now is boost the value of their trade chips and try to develop their players. So, I mean, you could argue that it's the most important thing you could do because there's not a whole lot else you're really going to get accomplished right now. So yeah, hopefully they will take that advice in the offseason. I'm sure you'll remind them at some point.
Oh, you better believe that there is a Alex Avila should be re-signed to this off-season post that will probably land around December. So
Yeah.
I'm already thinking about it.
Okay, but you need to really work from a PR angle and figure out, how Al Avila can sell this without. I mean, obviously, there's going to
I
be
mean,
like.
there's always going to be the cries of nepotism,
Sure,
right? But
sure.
like,
But you do have to have some kind of answer to that because,
of
a lot of
course,
those guys
because
are
I'll
just
be able to
haters, but.
compare Alex Avila's tenure with the Diamond. He pitched.
Yeah,
He
that's
could
true.
pitch if we need him to.
Yeah. He's got a nasty something, curveball. Yeah. I'm still laughing. Now I'm laughing thinking about
From a PR
Ian
perspective, there
Kinsler
are plenty of Tigers fans out there that still own Avila jerseys and would like to wear them because
Yeah,
they
for
can't
sure.
right now because it looks like they're rooting for the front office.
Yep.
So there we go. There's a reason I would like to pull mine out of the closet.
Yeah. And I mean, Alex Avila does make a lot of sense to come back to the org at some point, anyway. But again, it's also, I would say, fairly possible that a team that isn't god awful is like, hey, Alex Avila, you want to come catch for us for a year? And Alex Avila's like, yeah, I'd rather go there.
Yeah, I mean,
I could always go to Detroit, probably, at
Well, and the
the
thing is,
end, even
he'll
if
end
it's to
up
be
in
a
the
coach.
Detroit coaching org at some point in the next 5 years anyway. We've already talked about that. But it would be nice to kind of see him move there directly from kind of it winding down his actual catching career, which he's only got a little bit left on anyway. I mean, the guy took a beating for how many years? But man, he's just so good at what he does.
Yep. Yeah, and just everywhere he goes, like it just seems like everybody ends up all the pitchers and players on the team just end up loving the guy. So he definitely has something there. Grew up around the game. I'm sure he just has a really good feel for how to deal with the egos and just deal with baseball players in general. And once again, he hasn't played that much.
Speaking of
he hasn't played that much, but he's out here, you know, with a 102 WRC plus again this season, like, still productive.
Consistency, that's my boy.
That's why we go on and on about, you know, people who walk versus people who don't, because Alex Avila will always get on base.
Plate discipline has always been one of his keys.
He is not going to swing at it if it's not a strike.
Mm-hmm.
If it is a strike, he's probably going to miss it, but he's going to be swinging. And when he hits it, it's going to go a long way, because Alex Avila has really good raw power. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm on board with this plan for sure.
I'm into it. All right, but, you know, speaking about him dealing with pitchers and, like, big pitcher egos, we can talk a little bit about Justin Verlander if we want to.
Oh, yeah, we should discuss this, because, yeah, it was kind of a hilarious roller coaster for Justin Verlander.
There was a lot going on in Justin Verlander land.
Yep, he, in about a week's time, it's hard to say if he, it's been too long, I don't want to screw up.
He was trending for a couple of different reasons.
Yeah, like, some amazing and less good. I just can't remember.
One of them is Tigers related. Let's just get the Tigers related one out of the way. So if you lived under a rock and you missed it.
I'm just trying to get the verbiage right, because I'm not sure about whether or not he ordered the specific thing, or if he just asked.
In his phrasing, he asked to not have Anthony Fenech from the Free Press, one of the Tigers beat writers. If you don't follow on Twitter or you don't read the Freep, and that's fine if you just listen or read us, bless your heart. But I guess he had some issues, and the issues that he had specifically were that I guess Fenech had taken some quotes that he'd overheard, and we're not talking about like deep baseball secrets. We're talking about like Justin Verlander likes astronomy, like he was watching a moon eclipse or something.
Kind of Al Kaline about it. Yeah.
And so I guess Anthony tweeted about it, saying, you know, Justin Verlander likes full moons, I'm told, or like you know, and not even in like a weird like accidentally like talking about butts way, like I just phrased it, like you know how Anthony tweets. It's just like, oh, blank, you know, overheard of this happen. Yep. And I guess Verlander took a little bit of umbrage with, you know, behind the scenes bits of information being shared in such a way, and decided that he wanted to have Anthony barred from the general press scrum after the game. Now, what kills me about this on so many levels is that, A, this is hardly the first time Anthony has been there with the press since this happened, since Verlander's been traded, since the Tigers have played the Astros in the two seasons where that's been the case. This has never come up. It is also wildly, wildly against the rules established between MLB and the BBWAA through the, like, contract with the CBA.
Yeah, it's in the collective bargaining agreement.
I just wrote a ton of acronyms, but like basically part of the collective bargaining agreement is that players will make themselves available after games with only like very serious restrictions to reporters that are with the Baseball Writers Association of America. And Anthony is.
And if you don't understand the point or why that would be, you know, why that would be the case, it's because otherwise players would just, you know, would just take the guy who paints them in the best light, or, you know, is willing to go to bat for him and never says anything bad about him, and those would be the only guys who'd be allowed in the club.
Well, and more seriously than that, it would give players who have maybe grudges or things where perhaps they don't want female reporters to be able to ask questions after games to say, no, I would prefer she not be allowed in there because I, you know, just don't like her, and not because, you know, I just don't like women. And like, and that's an over, but it is something that they could get away with if these rules weren't in place. And so it is part of a much larger issue beyond Justin Verlander just not liking Anthony Fenech and not liking that he, you know, tweeted some stuff that he overheard in the clubhouse. It was a way out of line for the Astros to agree to it in the first place, to not admit that they'd made an incredible mistake after the fact, to kind of be like, no, we stand by it, it's fine, we did what we did. No, you didn't do what you did. You done fucked up. Like, that was a bad
thing. Yeah, the thing about it is that, you know, Justin Verlander said he wasn't going to talk to Anthony Fenech, which is always their right. But we don't, and maybe he did specifically ask clubhouse attendants to and security to bar Anthony Fenech from the clubhouse. We don't know that, but one way or the other, that's what the Astros went and did. You know, Justin Verlander can say whatever he wants, and as long as the team doesn't comply with it, it doesn't matter. You know, that would be totally fine. But no, the team was like, you know, Justin Verlander tells us to do it.
Didn't let him in until the questions were asked.
We're doing it. So he totally big-timed, you know, the whole situation as well in you know, what can be an occasional, you know, pretty douchey moment from Justin Verlander. Like,
I mean, he claims that he reached out to the Free Press to give them kind of an opportunity to either, I guess, I don't know if like hash it out or to send another reporter, but then, you know, you have the sports editor for the Free going, I don't know who you talked to, cause it sure wasn't me.
Yep. And it's also not your job to decide who I send from my company to cover baseball. Like it's not a role that you even get to have a say in. So settle down, hotshot.
Yeah. Like it's like that sets a bad precedence when you've got Anthony, who's been on the beat for however many years he has. And it's been a long time.
And you kind of assume, you know, like there must be some personal, like, you know, it probably goes beyond that, but none of that matters. It doesn't matter what, you know, Justin Verlander thinks of Anthony Fenech. Yeah.
And Brittany Giroli, who wrote for the Orioles, and I don't know if she still is the MLB writer for the Orioles or if she's with the Athletic now, I should say. I know this for sure, because she wrote about it after the fact, because she had a similar experience with a pitcher who she didn't name, where she kind of pointed out that something had happened where he had a bit of a beef with her. And what happened is that the club, rather than kind of acquiescing to his request that she not be allowed to participate, instead kind of came to an agreement where the two of them were able to speak to each other privately, where they kind of got to air it out and kind of come to terms with what it was, and they were able to like come to each other with respect and work together after that. And I think that that's the way the Astros should have handled this.
Like, yeah, for sure, because I mean, it just all comes down to, it's none of this is up to the players, like, you know, and for the players to, you know, to assert the power to basically determine whether or not this person, you know, can do their job, to the point where, you know, I mean, if, you know, if a player doesn't, you know, say someone on the Tigers right now didn't like Anthony Fenech and tried to make this happen, you know, you're basically, you know, affecting Anthony Fenech's livelihood. Like, you as a baseball player are saying that, oh, this guy, I'm going to get this guy fired from his job. Because if he's not allowed in the clubhouse to do, you know, to do what he needs to do, then the newspaper has to send someone else, you know, to do that job, and he can't do that job. I mean, it's, you know, I don't like slippery slope arguments all that much. I think we make too many of them in the world nowadays. That is definitely one where if that was allowed to kind of stand and go forward, like, players would just go ham, you know, taking out every grudge they have on, you know, reporters of all stripes everywhere.
I don't care how good or how famous Justin Verlander is. I mean, we know Justin Verlander. We are very familiar with him as Tigers fans. No one player should be above the CBA, because that's there for both parties. And you shouldn't be able to just say, I know that these rules that our entire, you know, organized union agreed to, but I feel like they shouldn't apply to me. And that's bullshit to you, and it's bullshit to, like, the rest of the players that it impacts and everybody else that's involved in it, to say that you're better or above it. So, sorry, buddy. I'm siding with the Freep on this one.
Yep. And all in that same... Okay, so that happened, and then...
So that was the bad. So that was the bad. Well, now we'll move on
that
to
wasn't
the...
all the bad, because Justin Verlander also got ejected.
That was
same week for arguing balls and strikes, which I don't think had ever happened to him. I think it was the first ejection ever. And
he was very about it.
And I mean, you just kind of wondered, like, is this all kind of getting to him? Because, you know, he started this thing and pretty much took a... I was shocked myself that I actually had to take it to task and yell at Justin Verlander on Twitter. Folks, I hated to do it. This is my favorite player ever.
I mean, your mentions, I think, were garbage fire for
for sure.
A day or so after.
Yeah, I mean, most people agreed with me, but the people who agree with you aren't the ones that comment. You know, it's the people calling you a, you know, whatever. So, but who cares? Yeah. I don't care about people. So, anyway, at least not.
I'm very familiar with name calling on the internet. I'm a woman who writes about sports. So,
bye. Oh man, yeah, it's brutal out there. It really is. Guys, get it together. You suck. And then, okay, so this whole saga concludes with, yeah, then Justin Verlander throws his third no-hitter of his career, erases all the criticism and concerns, you know, emerges triumphant because he's the fucking man, and that's just how it is, you know? That's just how it's going to be.
I had to laugh because there was a great post, or I guess somebody had cut together an edit of his old, like, Perfect Game commercial, the one where he met Kate Upton. Where he's just like, it was like three no hitters, still no perfecto, and it was him still trying to sneak into the perfect club. And then Kate Upton's comment underneath it was like, well, like, no perfecto, but, and then it was like a baby emoji. Just like, oh, okay, you done did that.
That was funny. Yep, that was great. Because it is funny to see that commercial, because I'd kind of forgotten that that's how they first met and stuff. Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cute. Yeah.
Tough crowd, you know, still just like, eh, no perfecto, Justin. But yeah, so that was, you know, Justin Verlander, it's always a saga.
He's the first person, the first pitcher ever to do it twice at the same away stadium, which I thought was pretty cool, because it was May 7th for the first one with the Jays, and then he did it again, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, I still like the pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's still an all-time great, amazing pitcher that I would absolutely love in a heartbeat to see end his career and wear the Tigers hat into Cooperstown, but like, a bit of a snot.
Yeah, I still like Justin Verlander. I think he's basically a good dude. It's just that, you know, he is getting into his divaness.
If you're that good, I guess you can get away with it. So, like, you do you, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it just is what it is. Like, you know. Yeah, so that was the Justin Verlander saga, and it's never dull over there, but it is just incredible. You know, I don't know if he's going to win the Cy Young Award. It seems like he's the slight favorite right now, but you've still got, you know, Gerrit Cole, you've got Charlie Morton, who the Astros were stupid not to sign back, because they would be walking away with this thing if they had signed Charlie Morton back. You know, it's pretty much down to those couple guys, and you would think that this, you know, the no-hitter is like that little point of emphasis that can turn the dusty, pea-brained sports writers who vote on these things, you know, in the proper direction for once, because it just seems like sometimes they need that narrative more than anything. Like, that's what it comes down to, is I'll vote for this guy if I can find a way to, you know, to make a slightly controversial story out of the whole thing. Seems to be the way to go, or at least, like, you know, some kind of hotness involved, so throwing the no-no doesn't hurt you, and maybe he will finally get the long-deserved third Cy Young this year, but in the end, it doesn't matter. He's a Hall of Famer already. That's a lot, don't even sweat it. Do we want to talk about...
That's a no-joke.
Do we want to talk about Nick Castellanos and the...
Oh, we kind of talked about it at the beginning. I don't know, man.
The swagification of Chicago.
Oh, my God. It's like, what do they love it? They get, like, it's like big swinging Nick.
Big Nick energy.
Oh, my God. Big Nick energy. Man, Chicago is enamored with Nicholas Castellanos. Yep. Like, it's funny because I keep seeing tweets pop up from his girlfriend about, like, ladies, I know I love him too, but, like, chill.
Settle down.
Like, settle down. You know, we love Chicago too, but, like, he's got a girl. Yeah. I mean, like, he's still Nick. Like, there was a post the other day where I guess he and his girlfriend, Jessica, I think is her name. I don't want to get that wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is. I guess his son were out, and they had like a picnic in like the outfield at Wrigley, and brought a, you know, kid's pool out into the field so that they could have a good afternoon out there. And my thing with him is I'm not at all mad that he's excelling and doing so well and being liked. Like, unless you take into account the beginning of last season of the podcast where I just was like, Nick, just button up your goddamn shirt. And had some Nick issues. Nick grew on me over that year and a bit. And I'm happy for him. I'm happy he's doing well, and I'm happy he's playing on a contending team, but I could really do without like the fake philosophy of like how the mind shift changes and the be here now and blah. Like, I mean, calm down, like, you're not Sartre, like, just chill out.
I love all that though.
Play your game and don't make it at the expense of the team that supported you from when you came up until now, and don't claim that Comerica was the problem when you were able to hit 27 home runs there in 2017 and just couldn't do it again. Like, that's not the park's fault.
I don't care about any of this. I love Nick. I'm super excited about all this. I'm very happy for him. and I am absolutely loving seeing the Chicago Cubs fans just flip out and go crazy for him.
Because
the Tigers didn't appreciate him. Tiger fans, to some extent, didn't appreciate him. And, you know, I don't blame him for wanting to get the hell out of here because it's a cesspool. The one thing I would agree with is that I could do without the shots back. Like, we all know, it wasn't fun here. It sucked. You weren't happy. You were in the prime of your career. You put yourself out there in ways that athletes hardly ever do, just to really make the case, like, I really want to stay here, you guys. I really want to sign an extension. And basically, you know, just got completely dissed. Like, didn't even get an offer. Didn't even, like, get talks, you know, started, which is, you know, pretty harsh treatment for a fan base who has so many media members who will still tell you that, you know, oh, cutting Jordy Mercer would kill the Tigers' chances of signing free agents in the future. All that kind of nonsense. You know, I can feel how it all went for Nick. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the podcast, I think, helped a lot of people and kind of warmed people up to who he is. I don't really need the philosophy necessarily either, but I find it hilarious. And it just fits so perfectly with the Cubs because the Cubs are so annoying that way. Like, they've got the Joe Madden thing where Joe Madden's got all his cute sayings and inspirational quotes and, you know, all his, you know, Yogi Berra-esque lingo, like, all that sort of stuff. So it all just sort of fits with the David Ross to Anthony Rizzo, you know, lineage. It's just all kind of making sense. I just don't want to hear anymore about, you know, how hard it was here and how you didn't like playing for the Tigers. Like, I don't care.
You can't talk to Bob Nightingale about how much you dislike analytics and then say you go look at spray charts. You can't do that.
It's just like launch angle, you know, like, and all that stuff. Like, you know, anybody who, you know, has a problem with any of that stuff, it's almost a lock that they don't even understand what they're talking about. So
no.
Yeah.
Ludicrous. So anyway, I'm really looking forward to the Cubs, like, offering him an extension in the off season. And then fans realizing over the course of an entire season, how abysmal his outfield performance is. And watching this all kind of steadily decline, but at least he'll still hit home runs. God. So
good. Hateful.
Well, not hateful. I'm a realist and I love it.
That's Schadenfreude there. You want to see it.
I do kind of. I mean, I write about the Cubs. I'm going to have to deal with it no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to do fine, you know, for them if they decide to keep him. You know, when you look at what he's done over there, though, honestly, like, this is just who he is. You know, he's a little bit streaky because he doesn't walk that much. So he'll have, you know, periods of time where he's not on base as much as you'd like and people get down on him. And then he goes fucking ham for a month or two. And, you know, I've seen a couple wall scrapers in Wrigley. I'm sure playing in Wrigley Field is helping him a little bit, and it's helping him probably defensively, too. You know, getting to play right field there is a little bit easier. You've got Jason Hayward filling up the center for you. So, yeah, it's just, all in all, it's a good situation, and I just think, like, you can see, like, what his full potential is right now. Like, and that's a good player, which is what I said all along, and the Tigers, you know, just basically fumbled him away for a whole bunch of nothing. Another asset wasted in the rebuild, which is not great. So, from the Tigers' perspective, that's really the only key takeaway is that, you know, you had a good player, not a great player, not even a really good player, but just a good player, and got essentially nothing. Like, just fumbled the whole thing, devalued him yourself as the general manager by a lot of the comments that Al Avila made along the way. Didn't help at all by talking about the fact that, oh, no one really wants to trade for him and stuff. Like, what? I don't even know what you're doing at this point, Al Avila, sometimes. So, yeah, I don't know. One way or the other, the Nick Castellanos saga in Detroit, you know, appears to be over. It's really hard to imagine him wanting to come back here. And so, there it is. Good luck. Fly free, little bird. Do your thing.
Go get yourself a postseason. You won't go to World Series, but get a postseason.
Yeah, but at least get back to some postseason play and have a good time. And I won't be rooting for the Cubs, but I'll be rooting.
Well, the Cubs aren't going to make it past the NLDS if they get in. They've had too much of a, I think, a really inconsistent and streaky season, and they haven't ever pulled far enough ahead to really mark themselves as being a championship team this year.
I know, but I could say that about the whole National League, really. I don't know.
Well, the Dodgers, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the Dodgers are really good. I can
look
at
the Dodgers' home record, Brandon, and tell me they aren't good.
Yeah, they're definitely good. I mean, Atlanta's good. Washington has, you know, Washington's pretty good still, despite some of their struggles. But none of these teams really has like that, like dynamite bullpen.
The shine.
Yeah, and the shine. Yeah, I don't quite feel it. Like it certainly feels like it should be the Dodgers' year, but. I don't know, that tandem of Shane Green and Mark Melanson holding it down in Atlanta, you know, you're not going to hit those guys in the late innings. What are you going to do against that? I have been happy to see, since we've been talking about Nick, we should give Shane a little bit of a shout out in that, you know, Shane Green's first couple outings with the Braves were just god awful and he was getting shelled and they took him out of the closer role like after like three outings in or four outings.
Not even, it was like the second outing. I think he lost the job.
Yeah, and since then he's been absolutely dominating. I think he's allowed a run or two one time and that's it. So he's been doing great. And that makes me happy because Shane Green is sort of like the anti Nick Castellanos in a way where there's some like hints of overt swag to Shane Green, but not in his personality. You know, it's in the hair, it's in the dog, or you know, some little gestures that he has, or the way he talks about things. But he's always very low key. You know, keeps it pretty locked down and quiet, and goes about his business and. I really like Shane Green. I was sad to see him go. So, rooting for him to do well there as well.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to watch how the Tigers do in the postseason away from the post, you know, from the actual team.
Yep. Yeah, it should. I'm just that way. I know you're this way too. Like, once I kind of love you, like, I'll always have kind of a soft spot and keep an eye
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. I still watch out for him. Ian Kinsler. Still think about him. Miss him.
Yep, same here. I mean, I was so excited when Ian Kinsler got to pitch about a month ago. Like, I couldn't contain myself and was like...
Yeah, I mean, that was the same week. It was the same week Alex Avila and Ian Kinsler pitched the same week. It was amazing.
Yep, it was great. Now, if I could just get Jose Iglesias to pitch one time...
Oh, man.
Alex Avila got to pitch, that's cool, but I want to see Jose Iglesias pitch one time. That's my thing. I'd love to see Miggy pitch, but they'll never let it happen.
I mean, maybe in his last season...
Yeah, maybe. He's still got the arm strength.
I would dig it.
You know he's going to be just a totally ridiculous ham up there and be laughing and just trying all kinds of junk.
He'll do like the old Valverde routine where he'll like shake his shoulders and look forward and back and just like huff, and then, you know, he'll have a whole setup. It would be amazing.
Yeah, it'll be silly. Yep. So, let's see. There's still a couple things to talk about. Let's get to this one just because I know everybody's been talking about it. Dave Dombrowski... One, not even a full season after winning a World Series with the Boston Red Sox, was pretty unceremoniously, once again, released by the Red Sox. And they've decided, it seems like, that they're just going to kind of promote, like, the whole, like, vice president group.
It's like four or five dudes are now taking over managing the team, pretty much.
Yeah, well, there's one woman in there, but I can't remember what she does either. Yeah, that's right.
Damn.
I know. They should...
me and my sexist, like,
I know.
Assumptions. I feel bad now.
Yeah, maybe they could just... No, I shouldn't even go there.
No, don't.
Just stop, Brandon. Stop right now. It's just been odd, and, you know, they have a Vice President, Eddie Romero, that I know they really like. I've talked to some people who are Boston knowledgeable who seem to think that they would probably like him to take over. And the Cubs kind of made a move by creating a new position for Jason McLeod, who is a vice president now of player personnel in Chicago. Me and my buddy Mark Garage have wanted Jason McLeod as Al Avila's replacement for a couple of years, so that made us sad. It also, you know, seemed like kind of a move that came right after Dombrowski's firing to kind of block Boston out if they had any designs on trying to come after McLeod. But once again, Dave Dombrowski fired in kind of a weird kind of miasma of, you know, kind of silence from ownership, and the timing is weird, and the ownership group never talked about it.
Yeah, there's like, no press conference. They were just like, no, we're not going to talk about it. Bye.
Yeah, the players found out, and Alex Cora, their manager, found out, and then had to like handle all the PR for the organization over it, because nobody even came down to talk about it. The whole thing was weird. Is there something about Dave Dombrowski that just in the end like rubs people wrong, do you think?
Is it the polos, do you think?
It might be
like all of those stripy button, those stripy polo shirts.
Is he just too fresh?
Do they think he's just running off to play golf? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, I mean, I've obviously never met Dave Dombrowski, but I never disliked him.
Yeah, he seems like a very nice. He gives you he's a very nice man.
He seems like you're nice. Like if your mom got remarried and Dave Dombrowski was your stepdad, I feel like you would probably not be mad about it.
Yeah, unless
that's what he gives me, nice stepdad vibes.
Yeah, maybe if you were a teenager, you wouldn't be so into it, but...
fucking polos.
But yeah, you'd be happy, like, if your mom met that dude when, you know, once you were in your 20s and you wanted to go on and be happy. Like, oh yeah, he'll, you know, he's a solid dude.
So are we
dude.
Saying in this dude. Metaphor that the Boston Red Sox are, like, an irate 14-year-old whose mom remarried and they're just done?
Yeah. I hate you. You're not my real dad, Dave Dombrowski.
You're not my real dad anymore.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is weird, but do you think... Okay, here's the real question. This is, like, to get to brass tacks here, since we've been going on for a while. Do you think Dave Dombrowski gets another GM position?
Absolutely.
Or do you think... Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure, man. I think he will, but I still think it's, like, a little bit more like 65-35. I think that Dave Dombrowski... is kind of a relic at this point. Like there's things he can do for you in terms of negotiating. You know, yeah, he's got, you know, he's obviously got skills as a negotiator and a deal maker, but I don't know. Like, it just feels like the time has passed for the type of GM that Dave Dombrowski is. And obviously Boston thinks that's the case. We don't really know what, you know, Mike Ilitch's motivations particularly were, like, you know, it might have just been, you know, rage and frustration more than any specific, you know, thought process or decision. But you know, Dave Dombrowski's not an analytics guy. He's not a guy who's had any success building farm systems anytime in recent history. And I mean, I assume he did what, you know, John Henry and the Red Sox ownership group wanted, which is come in, you know, do what it takes and win us a World Series. But in the process, of course, he traded away a pretty substantial amount of very high-end prospects. He signed a couple of fairly injury-prone pitchers in Chris Sale and David Price to some very expensive contracts. And I don't know, it just sort of feels like maybe this is the scapegoating at the end. Like Boston saying, like, all right, we're going to have to we have to take a step back for a couple years because this guy over here... spent all of our money and gave away all of our good young players, and all we got was this lousy World Series trophy.
Yeah, exactly. But you got to assume there's probably a team out there that's like, who fucking cares? I just want to win a goddamn ring.
Yeah.
And Dombrowski can get you to the World Series. So.
Yep. So who's in the position that Boston was in, you know, heading into the 2016 season? I mean, you could think of like maybe the White Sox.
Are they there yet? I mean, they do have the young talent already in place,
and they've still got and everyone kind of
thought everyone kind of thought they were going to do it like by I think this year when they started making some of those moves. So, you know, maybe.
Yep, and they haven't really started to spend the money. You know, they're kind of getting the young guys up. They've got Dylan Cease up, Michael Kopech, who's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, should come back from Tommy John surgery if things go well next year. And then, yeah, it feels like once you get to that point, like, your window's kind of got to be open, because they've already had, you know, Tim Anderson up for a couple seasons, and he's developed, and he wasn't really, like, one of the better guys to begin with, but he's turned out okay, and Yoan Moncada's been up a couple years, Eloy Jimenez has been up all this year, they've got Luis Robert coming, so it feels like, you know, you can't wait forever. Like, it does feel like, you know, the window has to open in the next year or two for them, so... Yeah, maybe they could work for him. Maybe somewhere like, you know, the Padres, if they, you know, if they're like, hey, we're keeping these three guys, and okay, you can trade the rest to get us to the mountaintop.
That could be interesting. I mean, that's a team that's like hungry for it too.
Yeah.
So, and they've got the core pieces, I think, to make a case for it.
Yeah, they've definitely got, you know, one of the top two farm systems in baseball. I mean, it's a deep, goddamn farm system. So Dave could go in there and trade all those guys away if they wanted to. But I just don't know. I just don't know if there are teams that think that's the way to go about it right now. I don't know. I still think like there may be a bit of a surprising lack of interest in Dave Dombrowski this offseason. Maybe sometime down the road that'll change. I could see Dave Dombrowski maybe moving more into like a sports management, you know, agent type role, something like that. Or maybe something in, you know, Major League Baseball itself, like some kind of a executive position of some sort, something like that maybe. But yeah, I don't know. It was definitely interesting to see how that all went down. It just seems like, you know, like Dave Dombrowski is always the victim of his own success somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. Like he does so well, and then, you know, so long.
Yeah. Well, we didn't like the way you did it, and you didn't win the World Series here. And, you know, yeah, it just you know, it's a tough crowd, but that's the business. So, and Dave Dombrowski probably knows that as well as anybody.
He does understand the nature of the beast.
He sure does. All right. I think that's going to about wrap it up tonight.
I'm going to go watch It.
Oh, yeah, you should watch It. Yeah, that's, you know, I remember when the miniseries came out back in the 80s that I was into it and it was kind of good. But I read the book and then finally, like at age 43 or something, and then watched the first part of the series and the new series, the movies. And man, I mean, it was damn good, and it was way better than the miniseries, I thought. They actually, you know, I mean, it's not that they needed the CGI that much, but there was just so many things about it that were good. Bill Skarsgård is super creepy. He does a great job.
I'm told that. Like, I haven't read the book, and I was a bit too young for the miniseries when it came out. And so I have no real exposure to the story whatsoever, except creepy clown, once played by Tim Curry. The awkwardly hot Sarsgaard brother is in this as the clown now. So
apart from the conventionally hot Sarsgaard brothers, of which there are probably like eight.
Yeah, there are very conventionally hot Sarsgaard brothers, and then there's Bill, who is like, you're weird looking, but I'm not mad at it.
Yeah. He's just like the slightly bug-eyed one. But
it's
yeah,
the eyes. Sort of, he's got the creepy eyes.
They're like the Hemsworths of Sweden, someone called them the other day.
They are, absolutely.
Except that Stellan Skarsgård is like a super highly regarded and you know, very talented actor who's been in all kinds of amazing things.
Absolutely.
But, sorry, Hemsworth, but you're not quite there yet.
So I don't know. Like I asked a friend, I'm like, if I watch this right before I go to bed, will I regret my life choices? And she's like, I think the most you'll regret is that it's a pretty long movie. Like the clown. Sound is creepy, but then we talked about the fact that like she and I both watched Luther, which is the Idris Elba BBC series where he's a detective, and she's like, I think watching Luther before bed is a far worse life decision than watching It. And my subtitle name for Luther is Every Horrible Thing You Could Imagine Happening to a Woman, the TV show.
Yeah.
Like, there's absolutely a scene in that show. Spoilers, everybody.
The CSI Special Victims Unit wasn't dark enough for you.
Yeah. There's a scene in this show, in Luther, where like this woman goes to climb into bed, and she's like going to bed for the night, and a man just slides out from under her bed. And I've never in my entire life seen anything on TV or in film that scared the bejesus out of me more than that did. And there is a reason there are giant Tupperware bins under my bed now. There ain't no room for a body under there.
Yeah, you can't do anything. So, all right. So the scene would be that you know, you're going to bed and you pull down the covers and then you look and you see that all the Tupperware bins are stacked in a corner of your room.
Why would you do that?
And then you feel the fingers tickling your ankle.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh no.
I don't know, you know, I'm not one to really take these things too hard, but it did kind of freak me out. I think you might have some thoughts afterward, but you know, I mean, as someone who, you know, writes mysteries and has read, you know, tons of things about serial killers, I don't think you're going to be too bothered. I think you're going to be all right.
Fair enough.
There's going to be some haunting images, but man, the thing about this movie, and it's like the classic, like, Stand By Me thing, where the ensemble cast of kids is fucking brilliant, and when they get that right, like, you almost can't do anything wrong in a movie, because kids, when they're, you know, acting, and obviously, like, into what they're doing, and it's well written, you can't go wrong. Like, for me, anyway. Like, I love those kind of movies. Like, from Goonies, it just, I don't know, the whole thing just fits perfectly. So from that side, I think you're gonna fall in love with all the kid characters and stuff. I think Sophia Lillis is gonna be just a huge star someday. Jessica Chastain as the choice for her grown up part is just perfect, because that seems like the type of person that she's going to be.
Well, I think the cool thing is that, like, I've been reading a lot of articles about, like, the aged up kids in the new movie, and how good, like, the actors, like, how good Bill Hader is, and how good the guy with the eyebrows. There's another guy in it that's apparently just amazing and has very expressive eyebrows, and I can't remember his name, but somebody out there will know what I'm talking about. So
but
apparently,
matching the kids,
yeah, apparently
expressions and
they're
stuff,
just insanely good at, like, picking up on the nuances, the characters, and stuff like that. The kid, one of the kids in it, was also in Shazam, which, if you haven't seen it, is totally worth kind of picking up, because as comic book movies go, it was, like, actually very entertaining for a DC movie. And I actually really enjoyed it. It was fun, and it was cheeky, and it was really well done.
All right. We'll see. Maybe. Maybe I'll give it a shot. I think that's about it.
I think so, too.
I kind of wanted to talk about the minor leagues and attendance and a whole host of other issues with that, but we can save that for the off season when there's no more Tiger stuff left to talk about. So,
absolutely.
You want to tell us what YouTube videos you had on your channel this week? And
I had a long awaited video on Tuesday that was me finally deconstructing a baseball, but it, spoiler alert, was not a major league ball. So I did not find in it what I thought I was going to. So enjoy that. I get real mad and I flip it off at a certain point partway through the video. And then today I just released a video on bulks, which good luck to any of us explaining that. On Saturday, Lingo Lesson is going to be a bit of a long one, all about dead balls. So it's gonna be a good week, and then I'm starting to kind of film a bunch of postseason stuff. So
the balk thing is it's just a weird part of the game that just, like, no one can ever really seem to completely put a finger on what the hell it is, even.
Yeah, that was kind of my point. I'm like, look guys, it's hard.
Yep. It's one of those things. What's a buck? Well, I know it when I see it. So, yeah. All right. I think that's going to about do it for tonight. I am going to try to do a podcast on Monday night with our prospect writer, Jay Markle, and we're going to kind of do a little bit of a minor league recap, so you can look forward to that coming out. That'll probably be next Tuesday, but we'll start to do some season review. We're all starting to kind of kick into gear and slowly knock the rust off, which is basically how I'm feeling.
August was kind of rusty.
It was. To start reviewing the season, taking a look back at, how the farm system developed, how all these different players did. We'll be getting into all that kind of stuff as the season concludes. So you can look forward to all that. You can follow Ashley at 90 Feet From Home and check out her YouTube channel, which is also 90 Feet From Home. And you can follow me at Fiscadoro74 on Twitter. Thanks a lot for joining us. Ashley, have a good night.
You too, man.
All right. Bye-bye.